Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I'm the host, Belinda Ellsworth, and I am very excited about our guest today. I have Sean Askenosi with me, and Sean is the founder of Askenosi Chocolate. Lauren Askenosi, his daughter, is the chief marketing officer. Their business model has been featured in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and on Bloomberg and numerous other media outlets. Sean was named by O, the Oprah magazine, as one of 15 guys who are saving the world. He is a family brother at Assumption Abbey, a Trappist monastery near Ava, Missouri. It is my pleasure to welcome Sean to the show.
Thank you, Belinda. Glad to be here.
Oh, my goodness. So I'm just, first of all, I just want to say thank you so much for the wonderful chocolates that my staff and I were able to enjoy. That was a real treat. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Great. Well, why don't we jump right in here? And why don't you fill in some of the gaps from your bio and tell us a little bit more about yourself and a little bit more about your journey? How did you get here today to having this incredible chocolate business?
Well, thank you for asking. I grew up in Springfield, Missouri, and my dad was a lawyer when I was growing up, and he died when I was young, when I was a teenager, of lung cancer. And that really set me on a path, I think, of trying to, A, follow in his footsteps, and B, trying to spend a lifetime recovering from the grief of his death, which made quite an impact on me. And then I myself went to the University of Missouri and graduated from law school there. And then I practiced criminal law for almost 20 years, specializing in serious felony cases and murder cases. And then I really felt this pull to leave the law. I loved it for so many years and loved the courtroom. And then I stopped loving it after two decades, and I needed something else. So I spent 5 years searching for my next inspiration. And I landed on the idea of making chocolate from scratch, not really knowing what that meant. But within a few months of that light bulb idea, I was in the Amazon studying how farmers can influence the flavor of chocolate by how they harvest the cocoa beans. And then I started to wind down my law practice, and that took about a year. Bought equipment from around the world, bought a little building in my town to start the factory in, and here I am.
Oh, that is great. So there's two things I'd love to ask on that or point out, and that one is a lot of people don't do what you did. Like, I think a lot of people, you know, they follow a certain passion. Yours was following in your father's footsteps. And I'm sure that that was very meaningful at that time. And then you did a great job at what you were doing. It wasn't like, it sounds to me, it wasn't like you weren't doing a great job. It's just that you lost that passion, that what gets you up every day. And a lot of people stay stuck in that. And they don't really start to follow any new path, or they don't start to look at what might bring them that joy or that happiness. So I think that probably took a lot of courage for you to do that and know when the right time was to sort of move in a new direction. Do you remember what that felt like at that time?
Yes. You know, for me, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners can appreciate this, you know, for many years, I loved it. And it didn't even feel like work to me. And I spent a lot of time defending people accused of really terrible crimes. And I never lost a criminal jury trial in all those years. And I could kind of feel it in my body. I started having little panic attacks. I was depressed for a while. I took Lexapro to try to help me with that. This is all during the searching process for the next thing. And so one thing I might probably disagree with that you said is that it really wasn't a matter of courage for me. And I understand how it's, it absolutely could be for some, but for me, it wasn't a matter of courage. It was a matter of recognizing the pain of staying where I was worse than the pain of changing. And I had to leave because of what was happening in my body and my spirit. Emotionally, I needed to find a new passion terribly. And I found that during this search, the more desperate I became, the further away it was from my reach. So it was like this vicious cycle of searching that I thought I really, for a while, thought I would never get out of. It was tough.
Wow. So out of, and whether that felt like courage or not, it definitely was. Like it still takes an incredible amount of courage. And maybe it didn't feel like that for you, but I think that's how most people would feel that feeling. So yours was more out of a need and a desperation, it sounds like. Like, I don't want mm-hmm. my life to be like this.
Right.
But that also does take a certain amount of courage, because people say, well, this is what I've always done. This is what I know. I just need to feel better about this, instead of recognizing that it's time to move on. That's, I guess, what I mean by that, too.
Right. And then if I could say, too, and just interject and say that what you're describing is really a great, great interior challenge that many of us face. And that is, we might pursue these this kind of discernment that you just described and ultimately decide that it's better to stay where we are. And I have had emails from people around the country who have said that, who've said, you know, I've read your book and I've seen this and that, and I've looked at this, that, and the other, but I've decided to stay. And so I want to also not confuse the situation, but I also want to say that for those who are really considering it, it's okay to stay too. You don't have to leave. And there are many people who find a way to sort of reorient their attitude and to become more contented and joyful right where they are. That's okay too.
That's great. And that's great advice. So then tell us a little bit about your work today then, and how is this shaping your lifestyle today?
Today, we're a very small chocolate company. We've been that way for, well, since we started. We have about 16 people full-time, including my daughter and I. And we are currently buying cocoa beans from the Tanzania, the Philippines, Ecuador, and the Amazon. I travel to those places every year and have for almost 12 years. I just got back from Tanzania about 10 days ago, where I took a local group of high school students with me as part of our Chocolate University program. That was my 40th origin trip. So I go there to meet with farmers because I'm inspired by them. I want to have a relationship with them. And we believe that it also makes for better chocolate and higher quality cocoa beans. And I just love the travel even to this day. And it takes me between 50 and 60 hours to get where I'm going in Tanzania door to door. When I go to the Philippines, it's over 40 hours. But I go to meet with the farmers to make sure that the next crop of beans that we're buying fit our specifications, and to profit share with the farmers. We open our books to the farmers so they can read our financial statements in their language. So when I was in Tanzania 10 days ago, our financials were in Swahili, and we then use those financials to describe and explain our profit share that we give back to farmers, and we pay farmers directly, which is another reason I need to go and meet with them. And this is what I do. I travel to buy cocoa beans. We have community development projects in Tanzania. We have Chocolate University, where we try to inspire young people in our community that business can be a force for good in the world. And then we have a nutrition program that we're in about our seventh or eighth year of providing school lunches to kids in the Philippines and Tanzania.
Well, that is so great. And I'm sure that is extremely rewarding on a very personal level, that not only are you creating this business that's generating an income and you love what you do, but then you're affecting so many other people, especially young people, and in a completely different way. That must be extremely rewarding.
It is. And just, you know, we've been taking, like, for example, local high school students to Tanzania since 2010. And it really is something to stand back and watch our students really transform and to let this experience of meeting cocoa farmers in this very small remote village express hospitality to our students. And it really, I have to say, is one of the most gratifying parts of what I do. I mean, I love making chocolate and I love giving that joy to others around the country, but it really is something to watch students transform. And we keep in touch with these students. And so, I mean, literally last week I was talking with students from the 2010 trip, and I can see how this short trip has still influenced the lives of these kids and how they're contributing to their own communities now.
Oh, that's great. So let's talk about a couple of your greatest skill sets that you feel you have that have helped you succeed in owning your own business.
I think one thing to keep in mind is I started this manufacturing company making chocolate with zero accounting classes, zero business classes, and somehow I don't even really know. I didn't know how to fix anything or make anything. You know, as a lawyer, I could barely operate the copier. But I'm sort of self-taught in that way. And so I think one of my skill sets that I've relied upon both as a successful trial lawyer and now is that I don't give up easily. And I really, in the spirit of not giving up, I could even go as far as to say that I enjoy a challenge. And I think that is one of the hallmarks of an entrepreneur, regardless of whether you're an entrepreneur and you're the only person that works in the business, or if you're an entrepreneur and you have 10,000 employees. One of those characteristics, I think, is enjoying the challenge and trying to problem solve. And I think, I'm not saying I'm a great problem solver. What I'm saying is one of my skill sets is that I do enjoy the challenge and the analysis of trying to figure things out and solve problems. And I'd say that's probably maybe my greatest skill set. The other one, I think, is that I've come to this place where we don't need much. And what I mean by that is I've been able to work throughout the last 10 years of my life on understanding what it means to be sufficient. That is, in growing the company, I've not tried to grow it by leaps and bounds without thought for the end result. But what I'm trying to do is be sufficient. And that is, what do we need? Not to what do we want, but what do we need as a company? And that's allowed me to sort of decelerate growth. And I'm grateful for the sort of awareness that I've been able to cultivate and see in myself over the years. And I'm not saying it's perfect, but it's an aspiration. And so I think that's also a skill set.
I would agree with that. And I know most people that come in, they get on this track of, okay, we got to continue to have increased, you know, profits. We need to be bigger. We need to be reaching more people. We need to have more stores. We need to have, you know, and a lot of times at the end, they don't look at what are we really trying to accomplish in the end? What is our end goal? And I think people get like sort of trapped in this, maybe what somebody else has or what somebody else is doing versus what's their true mission of what they're trying to accomplish and staying true to that. I think that's huge.
I think that, yes, and I absolutely agree with what you're saying. And one of the, of course, we're driven by a culture of consumerism, which is encapsulated in this notion that we must grow or die, that we must, in order to have healthy economies around the world, that we must consume at all costs. And that consumption means growth. And we're sort of, I think, conditioned by the, especially the North American culture of, you know, investors, chambers of commerce, family members, partners who say to us, Well, this is a great idea, Belinda, but tell me how it will scale. How can you grow this thing? How quickly can you scale? And they all want to know for really good reasons, of course. I mean, chambers of commerce want to know because it means more jobs in the community, and your family wants to know because they think you'll be successful, and people equate growth and rapid growth with success. And so what you've described and what I agree with is if we can sort of reposition the notion of what success means, and if we know going in, okay, this is what success is going to look like for me. This is what not only it's going to look like, this is what it's going to feel like. And, oh, by the way, I want to make sure that I have a practice and a discipline in my business life and in my life that I will not let loose of that thing that drew me to the business in the first place. And so I encourage people, and in my book, I have a whole chapter called Reverse Scale, where I'm asking people to think about this idea of remembering that just because your idea may only affect one person or two people, or even only just you, just yourself, that it might still have great value. And it also will keep us connected and tethered to the thing that drew us to the business in the first place. And often, most often, that has to do with relationships. It has to do with humanity and compassion. And when we're able to express kindness and compassion and humanity in our workday, it's what gives us joy, and not money, not things, not consumption, not scale.
Absolutely. I think the other thing that you said is really you've learned to sort of be able to sustain with, you know, what you have. And I think that people get really wrapped up in there's a loss of sense of gratitude, I think, for look at what we have done. I think, you know, you could call it that old saying, stop to smell the roses or whatever. But I see this in business all the time, that people don't stop and celebrate their successes and have that gratitude of look what we just did. It's always, okay, we did that. Boom. What are we going to do now? Where are we going to go now? What are we going to do now? And I think there's, and people do that in their own personal lives. You know, they don't just stop to say, look what we have. Look at the home we have. Look where we live. Look what we get to do every day. They're always on to, okay, what are we doing next? Where are we going to go? What are we going to fix up? What's the next home we're going to have? I think that comes from a real lack of what do I really need? Just like you said, like really getting focused on what do we need? What do we really, and really to be happy and enjoy life, there's very little you really need if your basics are covered in life. I mean, you can have incredible relationships that don't require spending a ton of money. You know what I mean? And I think people forget about those things and they get trapped into this, the next thing they need to have, or they want to have, really, not need. And I think it comes from just a sort of lack of gratitude. Would you?
I agree.
Yeah.
I think gratitude plays a big role in our daily contentment, joy, and happiness. And I've learned this from my wife. I'm not saying I've learned it yet, but one of the things that she's taught me in our 31 years of marriage is this idea of being present in the moment. I mean, she was talking to me about that before being present was cool. In our daily sort of lexicon, you know, as Americans, and she's really been trying to teach me that for many years. And I also, my association with Assumption Abbey, which is a Trappist monastery that you mentioned in the introduction, has been for, gosh, almost 18 years now. I've been a family brother for about 5, and this is a monastery about an hour and a half from my house, and the monasteries, the Benedictine monasteries around the world, have been following the rule of Benedict for over 1500 years. And that rule is essentially a management document that governs everything from breweries in Belgium to fruitcake makers in South Missouri. And and what this is based on is, as I was describing earlier, sufficiency. So monasteries ask the question, what do we need in order to survive? And they make only the amount of product, whether it's beer or fruitcakes or cheese, they make only the amount that they need to survive and in their own community. And so what I've tried to do is learn from that And I talk about that in the book, this idea of this efficiency economy. And it's where we ask a different question, like you were just describing, Belinda. So instead of saying, how do I get the next house and how do I get to the next rung on the ladder and how do I make more money, we spend time asking ourselves, what is sufficient? What's sufficient for my family, my company? And when we start repositioning ourselves and asking that question, we're going to get an answer, because as it's a practice. Asking that question is a practice and it's a discipline. And when we ask that question, I think it puts us in a better spot with an open heart to gratitude, like you were describing. I mean, it really is very simple. It's a matter of gratitude. And so how can we reorient our lives where we're asking that question more frequently, and we're able to express gratitude more frequently? That's the idea of life.
Absolutely. That's so great. So what would you say then one of your most outstanding accomplishments are that you've achieved that has great meaning for you?
I think I'm still working on this, but I would say that one of the great accomplishments for me in the last 10 years is there are moments in my business when I've been able to experience the divine, or I've been able to see my true self as God created me to be. And I'm not saying that these are long periods of time. It's a flash. It's a glimpse of heaven, so to speak. And sometimes these have been in Tanzania. It happened just 10 days ago. And I can count a handful of times. And that's quite a thing to say that during the workday you saw heaven for a little bit, for a moment. And I think that, you know, we don't have a big savings account or a big line of credit or a ton of profit. And, you know, anything can happen to my business, anything. I mean, it could go in the basement in the next 2 months or 3 months if we don't have a good holiday season, for example. And but no one will ever take from me the experiences that I've had in this business of the glimpse of the divine. And it'll always be there. And I consider that a great accomplishment in my life to have experienced that. And I'm thankful for it. And I don't spend my life trying to find the next moment like that. What I do is I try to take those moments, like the one in Tanzania 10 days ago, and I try to say, okay, how do I then take the thread of that moment and bring it into my daily life today? That's my hope. And I also consider that an accomplishment.
Absolutely. So I would also say an accomplishment is writing your book, because it is not an easy feat to write a book and get it published and get it out there and have people buy it. I know, because I've been there. And that is something that you have to stay focused on for a while and see it to fruition. And you have this idea and you know it's going to inspire others. So tell us just briefly a little bit about your book.
The book is called Meaningful Work, A Quest to Do Great Business, Find Your Calling and Feed Your Soul. It's published by Penguin. And I worked on this book with my daughter for almost 3 years while we were also running a chocolate factory. And it was great to work on this with my daughter, and quite an experience in and of itself. And I had no idea what this experience would be like writing a book. I knew it would be hard, but it was one of the greatest challenges I've ever faced, because it just really was, as you said, I mean, it really, really was hard, and harder than I thought it would be. And I don't know that I have another one in me. I'm still recovering from the first one. And so, but the book is there to say to readers, this is a story of our little chocolate factory and my path. And what I hope to do in the way I tell the story is I hope that other people can see themselves. That's my goal. My goal is not for people to think, oh, how cool is Sean doing these things? My goal and fervent hope and prayer is that people will see themselves in this story, and that they will maybe read something and close the book and put it on the nightstand and then go do something with that thing that they've connected with in our book. And so that's really my hope for the book, is that someone will be inspired by it and then go do something with it.
That is great, and I totally understand that. I don't know if I have a book in me, because I finished mine in 2015, and it's done extremely well, and I'm super proud of that. But I have, I haven't even wanted to touch the idea of doing another one until just recently, and I'm like, okay, I'm ready. But it took some time to recover from that, to be super honest. It was just, it might have been one of the most stressful things, and then at the end, very rewarding, but very stressful things to go through. So I applaud you, and just give yourself time, and you might have another one in there.
I might. Maybe I will.
All right. Enough time.
Yes.
So tell us then about maybe an obstacle or challenge that you faced, and then how you worked through that.
Well, one obstacle is, and I kind of alluded to this earlier, is management of cash flow. And because, you know, my wife is very debt averse, and since we remain married, that means I'm debt averse too. And so we just don't borrow a lot of money. And what that means is often in the third quarter, like now, it can be very challenging for us from a cash flow perspective. And so what and that can be quite an obstacle. And any of your listeners who are small business owners, I know can relate to this. And so what I did in order to overcome this obstacle, which really began to sort of rear its head in the recession, was develop my own cash flow management tool with the help of other people. And the other people part is important in this story as well, because I started a little board of advisors, not a board of directors because we're an LLC, but just a group of people, of four or five people who care about my business, who care about me, who are willing to kind of be on this advisory board and help me through this process of cash flow management. And it has turned out to be quite a success, if I can say, for us to tweak over the years and use this tool to manage our cash flow in a way that makes sense for our business, and to be able to forecast it, to know how this is going to land and affect our business. And, this is really important, because this is where the rubber meets the road for all of us who have small businesses. I mean, we need to be able to meet payroll. We need to be able to pay our bills, and we need to be able to pay ourselves and our employees so that we can continue to run the business. And so for me, I would say cash flow management has been one of my biggest obstacles, and it's a work in process to overcome and manage that.
That's great. An advisory board. That's a really great tip, a really great little gold nugget.
Well, I can say, if I could just interject and say too, Belinda, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I was going to say, I'm actually thinking about re-implementing this advisory board. Even though I've been in business for 12 years, one of the things that I think is really important as a leader is to practice humility. And I'm beginning to see signs of a recession coming again in the future. And I don't know, I'm not an economist, but I'm actually thinking about reformulating the board of advisors to help me prepare and plan for what might be some turbulent weather ahead as it relates to our economy. And so just because you have an advisory board starting your company out doesn't mean that it's not a decent idea to continue if you face a challenge or an obstacle in your business, because guess what? You have friends who care about you, and they may be really smart and good business people, and you will serve them in some way when they need you. And I think it's I'm thinking about starting it up again.
Oh, that's great. And I think that's smart. Absolutely. So, working from your happy place, what's that mean to you?
It means beginning my day centered. It means that I begin my day by prayer for other people, intercessory prayer and scripture and meditation. And when I can begin my day in that way, I'm setting myself up for a greater likelihood of joy in the day. And so the happy place for me is working from that, from that center point, the anchor point of God in my life, helping me meet people who will transform my own heart. And that place of transformation, the place of open-heartedness, the recognition of my own broken heart, that's a happy place for me.
Oh, that's great. So in our close then, what advice would you give to others who want to become entrepreneurs or who are thinking about following a new path or want to do something different, maybe make that change that you made several years ago?
Sure. If I could ask entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs at heart who are seeking this one question, I would ask them one question, and that would be, where does it hurt? And that may seem sort of counterintuitive, but as I quote in the book, Khalil Gibran, who said, our greatest joy in life is our sorrow unmasked. And so I would ask your listeners who are thinking about that, you know, where is your heart broken? And where can you serve someone who needs you right now? Put the books down. Don't Google the answer to this question, but roll up your sleeves, find someone in your neighborhood or in your family who needs you, and someone does, I promise, and start serving them without any expectation. Gandhi said, if you want to find yourself, lose yourself in the service of others. So we're not doing it as an ends justify the means. We're doing it to serve someone. And when we serve others, even simple acts of service and kindness, there's a whole world of discovery that awaits us in our own heart. And that's what I encourage people to do who are seeking this change in their life.
Well, I loved that quote. I even just wrote it down right now. I don't know that I've actually seen that or heard that before. I'm sure I have, but I don't recall it. So I'm writing it down. That was a good one for absolutely sure. In closing, what are some exciting things maybe that you're working on right now? But more importantly, how can our listeners connect with you?
Sure. Well, they can connect with me by looking at my blog, which is seanaskenosi.com, or they can follow us on social media, Facebook, Askenosi Chocolate, or our website, askenosi.com. And those are ways to find us and connect with us and buy our chocolate. And we ship all over the country, even in the heat of the summer. And the exciting things that we're working on are we're working on two new chocolate products. Unfortunately, I can't tell you what they are, but I can say that I've been tasting a lot of chocolate in the last couple of months daily to release these new products in the fourth quarter for holiday. And that's, you know, even all these years later, I still love that. I love the exploration of new flavors and how those flavors can interact with each other. And that's a lot of fun.
Oh, I bet.
A lot of fun for us. Yeah, it really is.
Great. Well, just for our listeners, that's Askenosi, and that's Askinosie. We'll make sure that we put that website in our show notes so that you can find that. But again, that's how you can connect with Sean. It's Askinosie. Sean, what a pleasure it was having you on the show today. And I have to just say, I just want to say this to all of our listeners because I think it's really important. So yesterday you and I tried to do this and we were having some internet issues and it just wasn't of the quality that I felt that was going to be good for our listeners. We don't want cutouts and you know, really sketchy voices, and we want it to be clear and everybody can hear. And I was a little disappointed. My day was really super busy. And then I thought, okay, I had this window today where I was going to get some free time to catch up, and now I had to book this and reschedule it. But I came in here and I was fresh and excited and I wanted this to be a great interview today. And I have to say that our interview was better today than our interview was yesterday. And I don't mean just from a technical point of view. I mean, just even because we got through about three or four questions yesterday when you and I were sort of doing our practice run, if you will. And the answers today went in a completely different direction to some of the ones yesterday. They were much more meaningful. I think you and I probably just were top of our mind in the first of the morning. I'm even thinking reconsidering doing my podcast in the afternoon. That's what I've taken from this. You know, maybe I should record first thing in the morning when people are like at the height of their freshness and mindset and not tired or after lunch or feeling sort of lethargic. Not that you were any of those things, but I am just saying I'm sitting here today and about halfway through this, I went, it was meant to be that it happened yesterday. I know that for without a shadow of a doubt. And sometimes I think we push things or we press things. And I've learned by my journey this year is, you know what? Don't get too upset about anything. Most all things happen for a reason and they were meant to be. And you'll get a better result in the end if you just roll with it.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Thank you for saying that, Belinda. I really appreciate that. I agree with you.
Yes, absolutely. So thank you again so much, Sean. And I hope our listeners will go back and listen to this again. There were some really, really meaningful nuggets throughout this interview. And sometimes we don't all capture those the first time when we are listening to something. I know for as a trainer, I teach everyone that the first time you're just listening and you might hear something and it sparks a thought and then your brain starts to go down another path about that thought. And so I always encourage everyone, go back and listen a second time with really, what was it that sparked that? Let me write that down. Let me go back and really be intentional about the couple of things that I might want to take from this and change in my own life. So I encourage all of our listeners to do that with this interview, as all the interviews that we do, because, you know, that's really the way that you learn. You don't grab it all the first time. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Belinda.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends and be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.